Rock Hour, Burns and Gambo show here on 98.7 FM. Arizona Sports Station, my compliments to the music selection here.
Fine
song. Little Black Submarines by the Black Keys. God, I love this song. We're live from the Oxygen Community Studios. Jordan Bird is filling in for Gambo today, who's taking the day off. Gambo's got some vacation days he needs to use before the end of the year. I think after this one, it's just right around the holidays, so don't worry. Gambo will be back on Monday. I'm sure he'll have something to yell about.
Oh, yeah. Well, we got to...
just based off of the odds, I'm sure there'll be something for him to be very upset about.
We've got the college football playoff going to be decided this weekend. That has potential.
No doubt.
We have a Suns game against the Houston Rockets.
Oh,
that has potential.
Yeah, that has potential.
And, of course, we have the Arizona Cardinals and the Steelers.
We have the Arizona Cardinals and the Steelers coming up on Sunday. We have four games left for the Cards this season. This is not meant to be a conversation about tanking, about not trying to win football games, because I don't believe football players actively try not to win football games.
No, that's just NBA players.
I think organizations try to not win football games, right? I think organizations try to not put the best foot forward in terms of rosters or personnel or things like that.
Like the Miami Dolphins
right,
this year.
But I think when players are playing on the field, I think you...
Well, and coaching staffs as well.
Of course.
Yeah.
You know, when somebody is lined up across from you and he's trying to bash your face in, I think the appropriate response is for you to try to bash theirs in. I mean, I just think that's... And it's hard to fake that.
Yeah,
I agree. It's hard to...
Yeah.
But as Cardinal fans, as Cardinal followers... What are we hoping they accomplish over these last four games? What do we want them to do? Is it just all about the draft pick? Is it just all about finishing in a position to have the very best draft pick possible? Is it about the wins? Is it about getting back on track with improvement and progress and evolution and some of the things that we were seeing out of the Cardinals before the Rams game? What do we want out of these last four games?
I was just jotting down to answer that question. What are the things that I want? Well, I do want a high draft pick. I do want to see Kyler Murray continue to develop. And for those folks out there that still are wavering one way or the other, I want them to have some definitive resolution on David Johnson and Patrick, some of the bigger question marks. Now, that's the ideal wish list. I think you can accomplish some of those while servicing the others as well. So what I mean is, a high draft pick means the Cardinals need to lose out, right? Lose the last four games. But losing the last four games can still use that as the development of Kyler Murray. We've seen it through the first 12 games this season. Kyler Murray and Cliff Kingsbury in the offense has looked pretty good for the most part, yet they're still losing games.
Mm-hmm.
Ideally for me, that's my number one goal, is I want this team, I don't want the future of Kyler to be deterred, but I still want them to have a high draft pick. And I think that is feasible, that you can do both of those in the last four games.
So you want them, basically you want four San Francisco 49er games.
Yeah.
Right? You want, if you could get four carbon copies of how they played at home and on the road against the 49ers, losing all of them, but playing competitively in all of them, that to you is ideal.
Yeah, because then you can say, oh, Kyler Murray finished the season well. Yeah, he didn't have the wins, but now he can use that as extra motivation. But he showed enough progress to give us an idea of what we're going to have going into year two. And there's so much progress from year one to year. I can already hear the sound bites that are going to be said if that is the case.
Look, it's hard to argue. Everything you're talking about is logical, it's rational, it makes sense, and any counter argument I have to that, it doesn't have a real basis in I can't counter that. I can't fight that. But I will tell you that as much as I want the best draft pick the Cardinals can possibly get, I also want Kyler Murray, a guy who despises losing, who was disgusted by how they performed on Sunday against the Rams. I would like to see him win some games for him. I would like to see them win some games so that he can feel better about his first NFL experience, his first NFL season, than he would if they lose out. Because if they do what ultimately you want them to do, they're going to end the season on a 9-game losing streak. I don't want Kyler Murray's first season to be an L-9 on his way. I don't want him to have to stew on that and ruminate on that for 7 months before he gets a chance to go rectify it.
You don't think that's extra? Hey, I know what this feels. I have never experienced losing in my football life. I know what it feels like now. I never want to feel this way again.
I don't think he needs to experience a 9-game losing streak to experience losing. I think he's experienced enough losing at the NFL level. I think he's experienced enough of bad misfortune, bad play, bad whatever, to understand that losing sucks. I don't want to ever do this again. I want to reward him for a job well done this year.
I agree.
I want him to be rewarded for being the opposite of a typical rookie quarterback in this league. And the only way to scratch that itch for a guy like Kyler Murray is to win football games. Because I think he has been so atypical for a rookie quarterback in this league. I want him to be rewarded with a couple of wins so he can feel a little bit better about how this inaugural season went for him than otherwise.
In my ideal situation, Kyler Murray is collateral damage because he doesn't get the wins. But to that point, if the Cardinals go 0-4, do you think specifically for Kyler Murray, that's a setback for him? That's now going to affect the way that he plays next year?
No, I don't think it sets him back. I don't think it pushes back his learning curve.
You want him just be rewarded.
I want him to get a cookie.
I want him to
be able to experience a little bit of joy this season, because
I don't think he's going to get much out of a
9-game losing streak.
I don't think one more win is going to make him think, oh, you know what? We had a good season. You know, we won 4 games this year. I don't think one or two more wins is going to all of a sudden alter the way that he thinks about this season. To him, they're already going to finish sub 500. It's a loss. This season is a failure. It's a loss for him. So a way to reward him is by having a higher draft pick to utilize on an offensive lineman or a go-to wide receiver.
I just don't know. I don't know if he's going to look at it that way or not. Look,
I don't think he's going to be sulking all summer like, man, we really stunk because we didn't win one of those last 4 games. If he's sulking for any reason, it's the whole cumulative season, not just this last 4-game stretch.
I also, and we talked about this earlier, the idea of a better draft pick, on paper it sounds great. In April, it's going to sound awesome, right? I mean, it's you know, right now you tell me number 3 versus number 8, I'll say, I'm fine either way. But you tell me in April, oh my gosh, we're gonna wish they had the 3rd pick in this draft, especially with all the maneuvering for the quarterbacks and everything. But man, your position in the draft is only as good as the guy making the pick.
I agree.
And just because you've got a better draft pick doesn't mean you're going to get a better player, and doesn't mean you're going to get a more impactful player. And that's based off of the decisions that are going to be made about this front office, and maybe they've already been made about this front office. I won't necessarily feel better about a better draft pick, because I'll still have questions about the guy who's going to be making that pick, assuming it's Steve.
I completely agree. And that leads to another point. Everyone talks about the momentum that you can gain by finishing the one season on a positive note heading into the new season.
I don't believe in that much.
Well, especially with this one. Because think about this. Steve Keim's already made it known. Oh, we got tons of salary cap space to play with this offseason. How many of these guys are even going to be back next year? How many coaches, i.e. Vance Joseph, how many general managers, Steve Keim, are going to be back next year? So the idea, and I know that you didn't bring that up, but some people like to bring that up about you got to carry that momentum.
But I know who is going to be back. Number 1's going to be back.
And a 4-game losing.
And his head coach is, a 9-game losing streak.
I don't think it matters that much more. It doesn't make a difference one way or the other.
I don't want that mark on his resume. I don't want that black mark on his resume.
Okay, I mean, and I know this may not be a perfect comparison, but does anyone really care that Peyton Manning was 3-13 as a rookie? No, they care about what he did after that and how he became one of the best. I think if here's the thing. If Kyler Murray turns out to be everything that we hoped and wished to be, we're going to look back on this rookie season and laugh about, look how terrible he was and look how terrible the team was. Oh, look at what great spot we're in now. If not, then we got bigger issues than worrying about Kyler suffering another loss.
The Air Force Reserve Jerry Colangelo Classic, it's presented by Citi. It's back at Talking Stick Resort Arena this Sunday, December 8th. This year, the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame is bringing you a triple header of matchups featuring Tulane versus St. Louis, St. Mary's versus Dayton, and Liberty versus GCU. Arizona Sports giving you the exclusive $9.87 ticket offer for these games. Go to the rewards page at ArizonaSports.com for more details. Steve Keim is treating every day for the rest of the season like business as usual. Based off of his recent performance, should he be business as usual? We'll talk about that next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Well, we mentioned it a second ago, these last four games, what's on the line, what we're hoping they accomplish. Jordan wants four competitive yet ultimately losing games for the best draft pick. I would like to see a couple of wins in there just to reward the kid for playing above and beyond a rookie quarterback typically does. Because at the end of the day, as I said, in my opinion anyway, a draft pick is only as good as the person making it. And which leads us into the conversation about Steve Keim. Now, every time we've talked about Steve today, I've made this clear, and I want to continue to make this clear, as Jordan Bird's filling in for Gambo today. I don't know how many general managers do a weekly radio segment with their flagship radio station, and Steve has always been willing, able, and available to make these comments. So I'm glad we've got this sound to play, right? Because yeah. I don't know how many general managers do this. He should be applauded for making himself available, at least to us, the way he does. We appreciate it, all right? That being said, Steve had some very interesting comments about his own future this morning on the Doug and Wolf Show, and he was asked some fairly direct questions about whether he thinks he will be calling the shots for the Arizona Cardinals this offseason. In fact, going so far as to say, well, almost of course I am. Yeah, nothing's changed whatsoever. Here's Steve Keim this morning with Doug and Wolf on whether he's talked with Michael Bidwell about his future and whether he's going to be kept or not.
Oh, no. Nothing's changed since the last time you asked this question. I think it was in week three before we played Cincinnati. So, or week four. I mean, it hasn't changed. I come to work every day and do the best job I can. Have a great plan in place for the off season. Very excited about fixing all the areas where I feel like we need to fix, and very excited about the future. I don't think there's any question. We've identified a franchise quarterback, a guy who can put this team on his back and take us extremely far in the future. So, really excited about the future, and I know everybody else in this building shares my sentiments.
I'm going to play another one, and then we're going to react to it. Here's Steve when he was asked a question about why his plan to fix it this year is any better than any plan he's had to fix it in the last two or three years. Those plans haven't worked out real well. What's different now?
Well, I mean, I think it's, we're going to be in a great situation from a cap standpoint, the best we've been in my tenure here. So certainly we'll have a better opportunity to be aggressive. I feel like we have a number of pieces on offense moving forward, young players that are our core. And I think there's no doubt that, because of some of the injuries on defense, some of the players that maybe didn't have quite the performance that we expected, that we have to address that area on all levels. So there's a number of things that we're going to do. Obviously, I'm not going to get into the exact details, but we're excited about the plan. And we're going to have a lot of fun this offseason putting this thing together and building around the core pieces that we already have in place.
Sounds like a man who knows he's going to be around making the decisions this offseason. Is that real, or is he just trying to project that confidence for his own well-being, for his own state of the organization, right? I need to project the confidence of being the decision maker. I can't for a second leave any doubt in anybody's mind that I'm not going to be the decision maker, so I have to project this sense of confidence that I am going to be, in fact, the decision maker of the Cardinals.
I think it can be a combination of both. It can be either one. Steve Keim has already been told that you're coming back next year. Don't worry about it. Don't sweat it. You got another year here. Or if Michael Bidwell is actually going to go a different direction, I highly doubt that he's already let Steve Keim know with a month to go in the season.
Totally agree.
Hey, at the end of the year, I'm going to fire you. Just keep doing what you're doing, though. So yeah. This is what Steve Keim has to do. He has to keep talking like he is going to be here for the future, whether that actually is the truth or not. But I take issue with some of the things that he says about core players on offense, that they have a good core of offensive players to build around. To me, at most, they have two, Kyler Murray and Christian Kirk. Everything else along that offense is a question mark. And to flip it on the other side of the ball, what are the core players defensively? Byron Murphy, Buda Baker. You can't even really say Patrick Peterson anymore.
No.
Because of the situation that he's in now. So all told, we're talking about four or five players on the entire roster that you can legitimately call core players.
Yeah, I'd be really curious to see, if pressed, who Steve would define as core players. Is Chase Edmonds in that group? For goodness sakes, we're not including Andy Isabella or Keyshawn Johnson in that group. I hope it is Max Williams in that group. Is DJ, and again, I see you over there rolling your eyes, and and I'm not ripping you for it. I'm just throwing out names here, because in my mind, I think he's, it sounds to me like he's overselling the number of core guys that he has on offense. I don't know if they've really got that many core guys.
So then if we're talking about a small, finite number of core players, that's all well and good that you have a lot of salary cap space that you're going to be able to play with and you're going to have fun with it, but that's out of necessity. Because if you only have four or five core players, how much rebuilding of this roster is Steve Keim or whoever the GM is going to do to get it back up to a competitive level?
And the problem is, the reason why you don't have that many core players is because how poorly you've drafted.
Absolutely.
The last few years. I mean, it's simply undeniable. And it goes beyond the first rounders. The first rounders stand out like the sore thumb, but it goes beyond just that. They're just, you know, you take away the three impactful second round players in Murphy, Buda, and Christian Kirk. There's just not a, I mean, DJ Humphreys is a core player. I mean, we started the year not even knowing whether he was going to get a second contract or not from the Cardinals. I think he will
and maybe the core player is not the right term to use, because if we're talking, I think of core player as building block pieces, guys that are the foundation of your organization. DJ Humphreys doesn't fall in that category, but he's a decent player.
And neither does Chase Edmonds, at least not yet. I mean, core players are guys that you've identified as, you are going to be a member of the Arizona Cardinals for a long, long, long time. And Chase hasn't earned that distinction. I do think DJ Humphreys is going to get it almost by default, right? Because he's probably going to get a second contract. Yeah. He'll probably end up playing 8 or 9 years here when it's all said and done. I don't know. I hear those sound bites. I listened to the interview twice, live today and then again on the Arizona Sports app when I was driving in. And both times I was just struck by the amount of confidence that Steve Keim seems to have that he will be the guy to rebuild this. And it makes me wonder if, to your point, he has already been told. It makes me wonder if the vision that he sold on Michael Bidwell last offseason, when they fired Steve Wilks and they shifted gears and went to Kyler Murray, was a 2-year plan, and that he's got full buy-in from Michael on the fact that this is not going to be rebuilt in a year. It's going to take two. And that the confidence of which he's speaking is coming from that place. Either way, Steve sure does sound like he's going to be the guy, but that doesn't mean that he will be. That's just what he's projecting right now.
And if you talk about a guy being in charge of a rebuild, why does this team need to be rebuilt to begin with? It was because he was the man in charge.
Sure.
He was the man making these decisions. And some of the key decisions that he made did pay off, like gangbusters. Carson Palmer, or, you know, I mean, that paid off. There's
Jared
no
Felder,
doubt about
Mike
that.
Mike Iupati, the first couple
of years. The hiring of Bruce Arians,
sure,
if you even want to
Bruce
include
Arians,
that.
The drafting of Tyrann Mathieu, the drafting of David Johnson, John Brown at first.
Yeah, but those are all 4 or 5 years ago
I know, yeah.
So how much longer can the Cardinals and Michael Bidwell decide that, well, we don't want to get rid of our best GM ever, even though those best years were a half decade ago?
The recent decisions that were made, you really, and the one thing I said all along, and I'm starting to doubt it, I'm starting to question it a little bit. I remember saying, coming out of the draft, man, if you just get the Kyler Murray thing right, nothing else matters. They got the Kyler Murray thing right, but I'm starting to feel like all the other stuff kind of matters. You know, when they made that pick, I thought, man, if Steve Keim hits this one out of the park, it doesn't matter if he strikes out in his other 10 at-bats. If he hits a home run on this at-bat, this is the only at-bat that counts. But now that we're here at the end, I'm starting to doubt that a little bit. I'm starting to feel like that's failed logic.
It's almost two different questions or two different arguments. Yeah, they hit on Kyler Murray. That's great for the organization. That's all that should matter. They have their franchise quarterback now, which is such a rarity in the NFL. But for Steve Keim, he needed much more. It's great, and that's all you need for the organization. But for Steve Keim, he needs more, and I don't know if he gets the other opportunity for it.
Yesterday, we asked if he was in a rut. Last night, Devin Booker said, no, I am not. Thank you very much. We'll talk about that coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. By the way, I do want to take this very brief opportunity here as we are close to the end of the show to thank our intern, Mark. Today is his last day.
Yes.
Yeah, Mark.
End of an era.
Truly.
We have some interns who kind of come and go, and we have some interns who go above and beyond, and Mark has been one heck of an intern for us. Worked very, very hard, picked up many things very, very quickly. So we thank you, sir. We appreciate everything you've done, and just do me a favor and don't come take any of our jobs 5 years from now. Go take somebody else's job, yeah. Okay? Not ours. We all like working here. Don't come take ours. So we thank Mark Feldman for everything he did for us with his internship wrapping up. Phoenix Suns back in action tomorrow against the Houston Rockets. The most satisfying thing about last night's win against the Pelicans was the reemergence of Devin Booker. I don't know if the game itself was very satisfying. It's the second blown 20-point lead in three games they've played on this road trip so far. You know, that is a, they're up 20, late third quarter. We'll be fine. Piece of cake. Yeah. Oh, my God, we're going into overtime because the Suns, once again, are allowing a team to shoot over 50%. There was nothing about that to take a lot of pleasure in, but watching Devin Booker score 44 points, take over that game in the third quarter, that's the Devin Booker we've all just been dying to see the last couple of weeks, and it was nice to see him make an appearance.
I don't know who is responsible for it, because we have talked at length, I know you and Gambo have, about how Monty Williams is making sure or wanting everyone to play within structure, play within the system, to play within the way that things are trying to be established here in Phoenix. And so I don't know, was there a conversation at some point where, hey, let him go? He's heating up. Let's let him go. Because it was almost an uncharacteristic Devin Booker performance for this season. Because in that third quarter, he had 13 straight points for the Suns at one point?
Yep.
He took over that game, which he has the ability to do, but this year we really haven't seen it because it's all about for the greater good of playing within the system.
There was one other game earlier in the year. I'd have to go look at the game logs, and there was one other game where Devin Booker went absolutely off. It was like 3 weeks ago. I can hear you click-clacking over there, so I assume you're looking it up. But no, you're right. For the most part, I said this theory yesterday, I think Devin Booker's got a level of buy-in with Monty Williams that he's never had with any coach that he's ever worked under with the Phoenix Suns.
It was the Philadelphia game. Is that what you're talking about?
That's the one. That's
he had
the one.
40 points on 78% shooting from the field.
That's the one. Right. But other than that, it's been a very reasonable, responsible number of shot attempts. He hasn't. There's only been a couple of games this year where I would say he's been inefficient with his shot, where he didn't get where to get to his point level, he had to take a lot of shots to get there. There's only been like two or three.
There's one game like that. I'm looking at his game logs right here. Minnesota a couple of weeks ago on the road. It was a win for the Suns. He had 35 points, but he took 26 shots.
Okay.
So a little bit,
and there was one against,
kind of old school.
I think the second game against Denver, he had like 21 points on 21 shots or 24 points on 21 shots. Right?
The second Denver game, he had 12 points on 13 shots.
Okay.
Yeah. And so, was 1 of 7 from three.
But I remember that game. That was the game that up in Denver where he was just awful all game long and yet had that chance to win it at the end, but went for the layup instead of the pullback, step back jumper. Anyway, the point with Booker is, at least for me, he obviously has a level of respect and a level of buy-in for Monty that I don't think he had with Igor. I don't think he had with Earl. I don't think he had with anybody
else. How many other Suns coaches has he been under?
Not that he disrespected those guys. I just think he trusts Monty more than he trusts some first-year guy who's doing it for the first time ever. So if Monty's going to tell him, no, trust me, this is the system. No, trust me, this is what you're supposed to do. I think Devin's going to listen to him. I think Devin's going to listen to him more than he would have ever listened to any other coach that he's had before because of the level of respect for that he has for Monty Williams. I don't think what he did last night was outside the system. You know, I don't – Devin Booker's 21 in the third – didn't look like a guy who was playing recklessly or outside of what it's just the flow was set up better for him to get those shots, but it didn't look like he was forcing anything to me.
Well, and I think that's the key is you have to remember we're still 21 games into this season, and this is a radical new thing that the Suns are trying to do. Have a real established NBA head coach set up a system and a strategy and a philosophy that's going to be used moving forward. So I think it's unrealistic to think that right away it's going to be like a duck to water and this thing's going to take off. This is a complete change for Devin Booker because now he's being looked at to have the same offensive type games, but do it in a more controlled environment so that he's no longer the empty stat guy. He is now putting up those stats, but doing it in a process that also elevates the team. That's going to take a little bit of time.
I did see that for tomorrow's game against Houston that Aron Baynes is doubtful. Ty Jerome is probable. I heard Bickley say this earlier today, and I agree with him wholeheartedly at this point. At this point, all I want is over these next five games before the Suns get DeAndre Ayton back, and understanding it's going to take a few games to get DeAndre Ayton back into the flow. You're at Houston, you're home against Minnesota, you're home against Memphis, you're home against San Antonio, you're home against Portland, and then bang, you get Ayton back. Just hang around 500 until you get Ayton back, and then let's see what this team can really do. Because I think DeAndre Ayton's presence on the floor, hopefully motivated after the humiliation of the 25-game suspension, hopefully motivated after watching Luka Doncic outplay you in circles since coming into the league together, hopefully his return provides a little more balance offensively for the team, gives them a little bit more of a presence on the inside defensively, and then we can really find out what this team is going to be. So just hang around 500 for the next five games, close, a game or two either way, and then let's see what this team can be when Ayton comes back.
Well, the other thing with some of those teams that you rattled off, like Minnesota, Memphis, San Antonio, Portland, those are all teams that theoretically are going to be battling for one of the last playoff spots with you in the Western Conference.
And those become very important.
Absolutely. And yeah. Then you look ahead, the game that DeAndre Ayton comes back for, December 17th, that is the second night of a back-to-back against the Clippers. So... hello, you need some depth there.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the first game is home against Portland. The second game is at L.A. That's a Monday, Tuesday back to back. Right.
Well, no,
there.
But it was a 25-game suspension, right?
Yeah.
And he already played one game, so the game that he'll be back is the 27th game of the season, correct?
Yes.
Which would be the Clipper game.
Yeah, I'm saying you're right. That's the one he's going to be back for. Yeah.
Sorry, I thought you were talking about the 26th.
I was just to say that was the first game of that back to back. But no, he's not going to be back for that.
And
game.
Before that, you have the Spurs, quote unquote, a home game, but that's in Mexico City.
Oh yeah, that's right.
That's coming up in a week or so.
Yeah, a week from tomorrow, as a matter of fact.
Yeah,
Friday. I forgot that got the Mexico City game coming up too. So just hang in there. And I look at the schedule. Look, the Suns are struggling with poor teams right now. Charlotte's not that great. Orlando's not that great. New Orleans isn't that great. The Suns have been struggling with them all week long. So I don't look at the schedule and see too many gimmies anymore with this team, but hopefully they can just keep things nice and steady until DeAndre Ayton comes back and we can find out what this team is really all about. Utah versus Oregon, the Pac-12 championship game and the first of three season-defining games for college football. How's it going to play out? We'll try to figure it out next. Jordan Bird in for Gambo here on the Burns and Gambo Show. Did you Gambo in there?
No. I can explain. So Mark and I have been whistling this tune, replacing lyrics like all show long. So this is my tribute to him.
This is your tribute to Mark?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Our departing intern?
Why was this song in your guys' head?
That's a great question.
Because this is very Gambo. I mean, this is very Gambo. 70s.
And the way you two were bopping your heads along to it was equally as Gambo.
All you got to do is say, this is my favorite part. Turn it up.
Turn it up.
Turn it up.
Jordan, this is the best part right here. Turn it up.
The things you think are precious, I can't understand. Are you reeling in the years? Throwing away the time.
I don't even know the words of this song. I'm just
now you
up.
Really sound like Gambo. I swear.
Have you had enough of mine?
He always gets so jacked up about his favorite songs, and then he starts singing along, and he only knows about like 70% of the words.
I just hope he doesn't work out to this one, too.
Well, this is a lot better than The Carpenters. Is that who he works out to?
Yes.
The big revelation?
Yes.
Yeah, The Carpenters.
But he doesn't run to The Carpenters. He just lifts to The Carpenters.
Yeah. Gambo's workout playlist. The Carpenters, Ann Murray,
America.
Carly Simon.
Steely Dan.
Steely Dan.
Rolling Stones. That might actually be too hard for him.
Poor Gambo.
Did we say Sister Golden Hair?
Well, yeah. Poor Gambo's not here to defend himself. Well, all right. We appreciate the tribute, but I really thought it was a shout-out to Gambo for a second. It is time for the Coors Light What's On Tonight. Games we're going to watch this evening brought to you by Coors Light Mountain Cold Refreshment Made to Chill. We'll talk about the Pac-12 Championship game in just a second. The other game that we're going to be watching tonight is already underway, and it's the Coyotes taking on the Pittsburgh Penguins. They are through one period. It is scoreless right now from Pittsburgh. The first-place Coyotes trying to stay in first place. It's nice to see them on top of those standings. That's been impressive.
What really is nice is I feel like every time the Coyotes have been close to a playoff spot or actually have made the playoffs way back in the day, it's always happened with like a late season push. Like, oh, crud, we're down 10 points. We got to make these all up. It's nice to have them in a comfortable position this early on in the season.
It is. It's just a question of whether it can last or not. But so far,
you got two goaltenders.
Exactly. The goaltending has just been out of this world good. And of course, the other thing we're going to be watching tonight is the very thing that we'll be joining, in essence, in progress here as soon as our show is done. But the game really doesn't start until 6 o'clock. There's pregame coverage going on now on ESPN 620 for the Pac-12 championship game. But if you keep it right here, we will have it right here on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station, and it is the first of three, the first of the trifecta of three college football games that will determine who plays in the Final Four. Tonight's Pac-12 game, tomorrow's Big 12 championship game, which is at 10 a.m. between Oklahoma and Baylor, and then at 1:30 in the afternoon, LSU versus Georgia in the SEC. The only team that controls its destiny is Georgia. If they win, this conversation is over. If they win, LSU's not falling out of the top four. In fact, I even heard Wacky Bickley and Murata today wondering out loud if LSU would sit Joe Burrow and not play him. I think it was actually, you're rolling your, I actually think it was Jarrett Carlin.
He's still playing for a Heisman Trophy.
Of course he is. Yeah, Joe Burrow's not sitting, but he could. He could.
Yeah.
Hypothetically, in a vacuum, Joe Burrow, the quarterback of LSU, could not play in this game. LSU could lose, and they'd still have nothing to worry about. They'd be in, but they would never do that.
It was interesting to me. Earlier in the show, we had on George Schroeder from the USA Today, college football writer, and I think most people's assumption is that it's LSU and Ohio State clear cut the two best teams in the country. He actually thinks it might be Clemson.
Yeah.
Which has kind of been the forgotten man in this whole playoff situation. They're just still hanging around there, undefeated.
Still a zero in the loss column, but not a real impressive schedule. No super impressive performances against great teams. Yeah.
Commissioner Larry Scott is doing his part, though, to help get Utah into the college football playoff.
Oh, good. Thank God.
He was speaking at a press conference about an hour ago up in Santa Clara. This is a tweet from Stuart Mandel. Quote, Larry Scott says Utah is an example of why he supported going from the BCS to the college football playoff. Notes that the committee has shown them more respect than, quote, some of the talking heads on TV because the committee actually watches the games and looks beyond brands.
Wow. Do you think that is Larry Scott's way of trying to Jedi mind trick the committee? You know,
I don't know. I mean, this committee.
Kill them with kindness. Oh, this system's so much better. This committee watches the games. They don't get wrapped up in brands. They don't get wrapped. I wonder if there is a dual purpose to Larry Scott's message. Yeah, he wants to rip those who don't like the Pac-12. Yeah, he wants to rip the old system. But he also wants to pay a nice compliment to the current committee and how things are done. Oh, you guys don't pay attention to just brands. You guys watch the games. You guys know what you're talking about. By the way, vote Utah tomorrow night, please.
I just think it's ironic that Larry Scott is talking about people watching Pac-12 games when the Pac-12 network is such a, and the contract, no one can ever watch the Pac-12. What are you talking about?
I know. That is funny.
What do you think's going to happen? You think Utah is actually going to do it?
I've got a bet with Gambo. I think Oregon's going to win tonight.
You think or you want?
No, I think. I don't want. I want Utah in.
Okay.
I want Utah in because I might be crazy on this one. I actually think they could do a little damage in this thing.
You didn't hear Paul Feinbaum the other day?
Yeah, I know. If you don't, America doesn't want Utah in the game. Well, I do.
And he's also said the fourth playoff team is going to get blown out regardless of who it is.
I don't buy into that. I don't subscribe to that point of view. I think Utah is senior quarterback, senior running back, all those studs on defense. I think they will give whoever the number one team is. I think they're more likely to give LSU a game than Ohio State. I think Ohio State might boat race them a little bit. I think they could give LSU a game.
And I'll take it the other way. I think Utah has a better chance of giving LSU a game than Baylor.
Yes.
I don't know. I think it's kind of maybe a little bit of a wash with Oklahoma, but I think Utah has the advantage in that one.
Baylor gets boat raced. Yeah. I think Baylor gets absolutely flogged by LSU or by Ohio State. But I think Georgia loses. I think Oregon wins, Utah loses, and I think the Big 12 championship game is the play-in game for the Final Four.
In all honesty, that is, I want an outsider, be it Utah or Baylor. I know it's, you know, like to Larry Scott's point about the brands, every year in the college football playoff, it's the same teams. It's the same five or six teams, sure, just alternated. That would be a nice breath of fresh air to have someone new.
But if Georgia loses and it does come down to a one-loss Utah team and a one-loss Oklahoma team, I bet it ends up being Utah in part because I think that committee will throw the Pac-12 a bone because it's been so long and so infrequent that a Pac-12 team is in there. I know it's not supposed to work that way. I bet it does work that way. And I bet Utah gets in under those circumstances, and that's part of one of the reasons why. They'll never say it. They'll never say it. But I bet that's one of the reasons why.
Who knows? I mean, there's still a lot to be played here. I mean, chaos could still ensue in one way or one way or another. I'm just hoping Utah can actually pull it off tonight.
Absolutely. We are out of here. The Pac-12 championship game is coming up next. We will talk to you on Monday, 2 o'clock. Here on the Burns and Gambo Show. Have a good night, everybody.